Welcome to the CDC podcast. CDC is the UK's impact investor and development finance institution. And in this episode of our podcast, we share some of the highlights from one of our recent Insight events, a series of events which aims to share practical lessons on private sector investment and development based on our experiences, knowledge, and research. Now, this particular event explored the role of mobile technology and social innovation in improving the lives of the 500 million people in India on low to middle incomes. So shortly you'll hear from our guests, Rupa Kudva, the Managing Director of the Omidyar Network India, and Srini Nagarajan, who is CDC's Head of Asia. But first, let me introduce you to our event host, Colin Buckley. Colin is CDC's General Counsel and Head of External Relations.
Let me introduce today's program with an observation. We're used to hearing about our need to change the world one life at a time. NGO campaigns broadcast pictures of a single mother. Doctors Without Borders make superhuman efforts to save a single life. And charities urge us to adopt a single child overseas and contribute to their health, education, and well-being. And while it is true that we can only change the world one person at a time, today we're going to investigate ways of changing lives at a greater pace and a greater scale than that to which development has traditionally been accustomed. India adds 1 million to its working population every month, and over 60 million Indian children are missing education. At the same time, 500 million low to middle income Indians will come online in the next 5 years, presenting a unique opportunity for development to be taken through technology. These are very large numbers, and today I will be joined by two development professionals who deal in those large types of numbers. And the first of them is Rupa Kudva, partner and managing director of Omidyar Network India. Rupa is responsible for the overall strategy, investments, operations, and portfolio development of Omidyar Network India. I know that she is also a very proud member of the Board of Governors of the Indian Institute of Management, Ahmedabad. So welcome, Rupa. To kick things off, I was wondering whether you could tell us a little bit more about the work that you and your team do to realize that ambition and what your approach to investing is at Omidyar.
Thank you, Colin. And it's really delightful to be here today and looking forward to a great conversation. What we do is we make equity investments in early stage enterprises, and we also provide grants to nonprofits. And all this work is across a range of sectors. Some of the sectors are more typical, like education and financial inclusion, for example, which a lot of people are familiar with. But we also work in some interesting white space areas like governance and citizen engagement or property rights, for example. You asked about our investing approach. I think there are four things that really stand out, and I'd like to call out about our investment approach. The first is what we call our dual checkbook model. The fact that we make both equity investments and grants, 70% of our total $350 million of capital deployed is by way of equity investments, and 30% is by way of grants. However, the 70-30 mix is an outcome and not a target. Investment professionals have the flexibility to deploy either of the checkbooks depending on their call on what will have the maximum impact. The second unique feature of our investment approach is who we serve. And who we really serve is what we call the next half billion, which is the 500 million people coming online for the first time via their mobile phones by 2022. And we'll talk more about this segment of the population. I think it presents an enormous opportunity to create impact at scale, because tech, as we all know, enables inclusion of the many as opposed to just exclusivity of a few. The third is how we think of entrepreneurs, and we think of entrepreneurs very broadly. You could be an entrepreneur in an early stage for-profit startup. You could be an entrepreneur in government. You could be an entrepreneur in an NGO. So our definition of entrepreneur is very broad. And finally, I think we are a tech-led firm. We believe in the power of tech to do good and create massive impact at scale. I think the power that tech and mobile phones and the internet have to rapidly include masses and hundreds of millions of people is immense. We really believe that the mobile phone is one of the biggest drivers of social impact in India. And so we invest, we focus a lot on technology as far as our investments are concerned. Having said that, we also recognize that tech can be a source of harm and risk, as we are seeing in many ways today, which is why we equally focus on investing and supporting responsible tech initiatives.
We have a lot of impact investors, I'm sure, in the audience. And I think one question that I often hear is that when you're using technology in development, it's a little intermediated. And I wonder how you measure the impact that you have when often you're at one step removed through some of these technology solutions.
Right. I think the whole question of measurement of impact has always been a vexatious question for the impact investing industry. However, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that as we look ahead and as impact investing becomes more and more mainstream, the industry will have to do a far better job in terms of measuring social impact and also the communication around the social impact. So how do we think of impact and measurement of impact? The first thing is, I think it's important to look at impact from the lens of the customer or the user, and not from the lens of what inputs are being provided, but from the impact it is having, the difference it is making in the lives of the consumers or the beneficiaries. The second principle, I think, is that because this is such a nuanced and complex subject, it is all the more important to keep the impact measurement framework very simple. So we look at impact in two ways. One is, what is the direct impact that the enterprise or the organization is having on its consumers and users? And secondly, what is the impact that the organization is having, which goes beyond its users?
You can't be criticized for not diving into the deep end of impact investing. I mean, the mission of Omidyar in India to aim for the next $500 million is extraordinarily ambitious. And I wonder, what does it take? I mean, how do you think about that scale of social change?
You know, that's a great question. And I think there are many ways to look at social change and many dimensions of social change. But let me just pick on two, which I think are typical to the way we think as a firm. Given the fact that we focus on the next $500 million, it is very important for us to have a very deep understanding of the next $500 million population and their digital journey. The next $500 million is very different from the first wave of internet users in India. They are very different in terms of their language skills, their income levels, their educational levels, their social and cultural context. And if you're designing businesses which improve their access and their affordability to a range of aspirational services, you have to keep the different context in mind. And let me give you a very simple example. You know, all of us, when we go and shop on the internet, when we finish, when we pick what we want to buy, we finally go to the checkout. And the checkout has a shopping cart symbol. The shopping cart symbol is actually a very Western concept of shopping, where you go to a supermarket, roll a trolley, pick things off the shelf, and go to the checkout counter. That is not the shopping experience of the bottom 60% of India's population, where their shopping experience, you walk to a store, stand behind the shelf, the shopkeeper or the kirana wala will take the goods off the shelf, show them to you, and help you make your decision. So it's not that the next $500 million will not figure out what the shopping cart symbol means. But if you keep adding up each of these small things on the internet, suddenly the internet becomes very non-contextual and becomes very alien to their reality. So if you are building businesses for this segment of the population, you almost have to reimagine the internet for them. And that means understanding how do they come online. They first start with social and communication, then move on to more sophisticated uses like entertainment, and then go on to education, and then build confidence and trust to transact online and actually make payments online. The second aspect of scale, I think, is, I think I love the way you opened this session, Colin, by saying you can have impact one person at a time, but how do you think of scale? And we believe that accelerating the development of an entire sector can impact far more many lives than any one company can. But how do you really accelerate the development of a sector? For that, you need several things to come together. One is you need innovative entrepreneurs, but you also need important sector infrastructure. You know, you need infrastructure organizations. For example, it's not enough to just build EdTech solutions. You also need teachers. So think of teachers as sector level infrastructure, for example. And then thirdly, policy. How do you create a conducive policy environment that is supportive of entrepreneurship and actually brings other entrepreneurs in? And that is where the two checkbooks of making equity investments and grants helps, because you can make not just equity investments in innovative entrepreneurs, you can also support the building of infrastructure for the sector, and you can also support research and think tanks that can help in the development of policy that is favorable.
So most of us, when we think about having to overcome a challenge like the next half a billion, would assume that we have to abandon thinking of individual people. But at the same time, you know, how do you focus on kind of bringing women into the equation while not abandoning this broad sense of scale?
So I think inclusion is core, because our purpose is a meaningful life for every Indian. And when we talk about every Indian, where we are coming from is that we believe that India's growth and progress and development should benefit not just the people at the top of the pyramid, but should benefit people in the bottom 60% also. And about half of that population is women. So we think about including women in several different ways. First is women entrepreneurs. I think for an investment firm, I think to talk about supporting women entrepreneurs is something that you see happening, you know, pretty much across the board today. But one of the things we realized when we dug into this a little more deeply is that across the world, the profile of firms or entrepreneurs that investors put their money in very often reflects the composition of the investing team. And that is why we decided to start with ourselves and really build an investment team which has a substantial representation of women. So today we have 30% of our investment team is women. So that's one way we think about it. The other way we think about it is what I talked about, the barriers. You know, we invest in businesses which really help and encourage women to come online. And a very good example of that is two companies. One is Pratilipi and the other is HeloFi. So HeloFi is a social platform that really helps pregnant women and mothers of children up to 2 years old come online, form communities online, learn from each other in their parenting journey. So that's an interesting way to get women online. Pratilipi is a self-publishing platform. So it encourages women to come and write their stories on the platform, and 70% of its readers are also women. And the third way we think about it is emphasizing the importance of inclusive business practices. I think it's not just enough to hire women and have them as part of the leadership team or have them as part of the larger organization. And diversity for diversity's sake never works. It becomes most effective only when the business practices inclusion in its day-to-day work. How do you make the voices of the women be heard, and how do you help the voices of the women form a part of decision-making?
So let me see maybe if I can introduce Srini Nagarajan, who is the Managing Director and Head of Asia here at CDC. And under his leadership, CDC's made successful investments in India in financial services, healthcare, and renewable energy sectors, including the creation of CDC subsidiary Ayana Renewable Power, which is a big investor in clean power in India's poorest regions. I'm sure you've been listening to Rupa's thoughts with interest. And I was really struck by the comments she had around the transformative impact of technology when you're talking about, you know, over 500 million Indians. And what are your reflections on the promise of technology and the potential scale of change in India that it might bring?
Definitely technology is definitely poised to quickly and radically change nearly every sector of India's economy, really. And so the public sector has been a huge catalyst. Rupa could have mentioned about the Aadhaar, where we have enrolled, it's a kind of a biometric digital identity program where we have enrolled 1.2 billion people. It was introduced in 2009 and is the largest public digital ID program in the world. That really is helping us a lot in terms of offering a lot of digital services. The next thing which is now being talked about is data. And we're talking about sharing of non-personal data that can benefit a number of micro and small enterprises, where because of the information asymmetry, they're not benefiting from, you know, a kind of a reduction in the borrowing costs. They need to benefit from the reduction in the borrowing costs that cannot be because of information asymmetry. I think there is a lot of scope for them to try and make sure that, subject to the credit rating, they should try and benefit from this. So the private sector innovation has really, you know, helped internet-enabled services to millions of consumers. And the internet infrastructure in the poorest states of India is also improved a lot. And so there is not much of a digital gap between the poorest states and also the wealthier states, really. If you try and look at the various sectors where the technology has impacted, definitely there's been real-time improvement. One is, of course, the logistics tracking vehicles in time that enable shippers to reduce the fleet turnaround time by around 50 to 70%. The digitalized supply chains have helped companies reduce their inventory substantially. The other big area, which we are very passionate in CDC, and so am I, is about food and agri. If you look at the last 10 years of private equity history in the country, $180 billion were invested in Indian private companies around 8,000 odd deals. Only 3%, $6 billion, has been in the food and agri space. Simply because I think the government reform has set this whole thing back. It's really archaic laws. We've gone through some recent reforms by the government, which are pretty bold. Whether the state adopt it or not, we still have to see, because agriculture contributes 15% of India's GDP and employs 40% of the workforce. So the agri-tech segment is something which we are working through our VC funds, both in terms of the B2B agri marketplaces, the farm to fork concept, the farmer marketplaces, also in terms of input and output, really. And of course, the big data SaaS platforms and the data centers we are talking about, really. Finally, I would say, Colin, that venture cap impact investing is not likely to scale up profitably unless we deploy technology for impact. It's come to that stage now. As with venture capitalists in technology entrepreneurship, I would think that the cleverer deployment of technology in impact entrepreneurship will enable scale and also have much, much more investable social innovation models, really. So we have reached a point where impact investing needs the technology sector to achieve change at scale, and it can be done quickly as well. And the WorldLink is another great story in Nepal. I mean, I just want to share a small story. They have installed the first connectivity in a region called Karnali, which is one of the poorest and the most remote regions of Nepal, with a population of 1.2 million people. Most pristine, but very, very difficult to access, really. So the company has completed the first facility in Karnali, and where around 1,209 sites of 62 rural municipalities and 600 villages are connected now. Karnali grows one of the finest apples in Nepal. But if you go to Kathmandu, they import apples from China. They're not able to transport it. So as a very first stage, what we have done is to give connectivity, whether that's used for Facebook or commerce, the time will say. But hopefully they will definitely try and use it for commerce. So that's one of those, you know, these kind of the development impact stories which you are able to come up with. So to provide reliable public digital infrastructure is very important.
Digital infrastructure can form the backbone which leads to the development of entrepreneurship across a range of sectors. And we've done, therefore, a lot of work in this whole concept of having open digital infrastructure, which just has the platform at its core, but also looks at things like the governance around the platforms, and also how do you really get users to come and use the platform and get entrepreneurs to come and build off that platform. And the India Stack is a great example of a platform which many entrepreneurs are leveraging. Similarly, we are talking about a health stack. We're talking about an agri stack in India. So the whole digital infrastructure play is also developing that whole ecosystem for tech entrepreneurs. And the third dimension of tech, I think, which entrepreneurs need to keep in mind and which we really care about is the whole area of responsible tech. How do you use tech in a manner that leads to policies, practices, and behaviors that make the digital lives, today our digital lives are as important as our physical lives. So how do you ensure that you create a thriving digital society where issues like privacy, data security, user consent, user control, recourse in the case of harms, all of that is taken care of. The harms of tech are mitigated. I think you need to build that into entrepreneurial business models. You need to build that into public digital infrastructure. Otherwise, you know, the online journey of the next half billion, I think if that trust is not built up from the get-go, you know, it will place limitations on growth at some point or the other because something will break. And therefore, the focus on responsible tech, I think, is equally important.
And Srini, if I can bring you into this, I mean, what do you see as the role of an organization like CDC in trying to promote entrepreneurship in our markets?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is, as you know, Colin, we work in three different ways. One is through our indirect structure and through our direct structure, which has got both debt and equity. Our ability to play across the capital spectrum makes us very special. And also our balance sheet nature of investing. We have the longer term vision of businesses. We can afford to take a longer term vision of businesses. We have no life constraints, et cetera. That's one big thing. So given our flexibility of capital, what is necessary here is basically, I think we are looking at the entire innovation environment through the lens of venture capital funds, which we have supported. And I think what we definitely, I mean, we have now supported around 6 or 7 VC funds. And through them, we are trying to examine various businesses and we take selective co-investment opportunities through them, really. We have a luxury of looking at it through the funds and making our selection. Of course, the funds have to ultimately do well in this market. I mean, we will only do selective co-investments in areas where technology is fulfilling our purpose of development impact. Otherwise, it just doesn't serve the purpose. I mean, if they're going to sell a company if a company is developed for selling it to the alphabets of the world, presumably they may not fit our purpose. I don't want to generalize it, but by and large, really. As I said earlier, it has to definitely reduce the cost of services and improve the realizations, really. And that is exactly, those are the kind of entrepreneurs in our selective co-investment processes, which we will look at, where it helps us achieve our purposes and where over a period of time, we can help them scale through our differential capital, which we can bring in over time, either through debt or equity through mezzanine products. But ultimately, last point I just want to make here is in the selection of entrepreneurs, it is not those fantastic presentations which matters to us. It is not the technology alone which matters to us. Technology is an enabler for an entrepreneur to deliver a goal. You can't put technology right ahead and say, I'm doing something different to technology. How do they use a technology enabled to develop, to try and deliver a goal? In our case, it's a more a social goal, is what I will look for in an entrepreneur.
So thank you very much for listening to this CDC podcast. You can subscribe to this show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts from. And you can find all the information on our Insights series on our website, cdcgroup.com. We'll be back with another episode very shortly. See you soon.